Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing okay. Not the best week for It's the Real.
Or for anybody.
Not the best week for the world. Let's all collectively work on making this next week better than this last one. But because this is a comedy podcast, we have a few comedic things that we can talk about. Number one, our super Ramon is out of town. What happens when Ramon splits, Jeff?
The whole building shuts down.
He leaves this guy, Carlos, in charge. And can you tell the people what Carlos looks like?
Carlos looks like, I think he could run like a car wash. Well, not run a car wash. He could hang out at a car wash.
When Ramon leaves town, the car wash goes to Carlos.
Yeah.
Carlos, a year ago, our refrigerator stopped working. The fan stopped spinning. And, you know, I opened up the freezer and all the ice had turned to water. There was a problem, right? So I go downstairs and I tell the doorman and he sends Carlos up. And Carlos rings the doorbell, comes in. We explain the issue.
I don't think we had ever met him at this point.
No. He comes in, and he's like, well, let me see. And he sticks his dumb nose into the refrigerator, closes the door, looks at us, and says,
kaput.
We're like, no shit, Carlos. Thanks for coming up.
Yeah.
So the other day, our shower drain was slow to drain, and the doorbell rings, and I open it up. And he's got a plunger in his hand. And I'm like, yo, no, it's not the toilet. It's the shower. And he was like, well, I was like, do you have like the gun that shoots air down into the drain to clear everything out? And he was like, oh, let me just take a look at it. So he walks into the bathroom and he sticks his dumb nose in the fucking tub. And he's like, there's a lot of hair here. He's like, you're not girls. I'm like, thank you. He's like, well, why is there so much hair? I'm like, because the fucking drain is spitting out all this shit. Who knows?
Yeah, it's coming from the wrong entrance.
You tell me. Why do you have a fucking plunger? So he's like, all right, let me go get the gun. So he goes downstairs and he comes back, returns with the air gun. And he fires a couple shots down into the drain. Doesn't do much. And then he's like, monsieur. And, you know, I don't know if you can tell by the guy's name, but Carlos is not French. So I assume that he's talking to us, the not girls, right? So he takes about a half an hour to get rid of this problem in the drain. Then there's a problem in the sink. Then there's a problem in the toilet. And he's like, you know what? I think all these things are connected. And then he's like, when Ramon comes back, he's going to fix everything. It's like, great. And by the way, Carlos, always when he sees him, he's like, yeah, you guys partying?
Yeah.
He's like, did you have a crazy July 4th? And then he's like, you know what? Place looks really nice. So shout out to our friends over at Fullscreen who made this apartment look real nice. You can go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal. You get a free month. You can watch all of our episodes. That's Angie Martinez, Miss Info, Charlemagne the God, Lenny S. You can watch this episode right here with Director X, formerly known as Little X.
You can now watch the DJ Drama episode, which went up yesterday.
You know what? I almost forgot about that. I'm going to go on fullscreen.com right now and watch it. We had our friends Shinsuke and Kat over here, and they hadn't seen the apartment, and they were really impressed. We said, you know what? Go get a podcast. Put it on fullscreen.com. In addition, Jeff, you had
a wild week.
You know, if you told Carlos about this part of the week, he'd be like, I'm going to stop talking to you.
I downloaded Pokemon Go, excuse me, which is the real life Pokemon, meaning that you can go find Pokemon in the real world.
You know what? This guy Alien G hit me up on Snapchat and was like, I'm about to name my Pokemon Go team or whatever, my account. What should I name it? I need a really good one.
Yeah.
And I swear, I said, I have no idea what this is. And then I lost you for a week. Where'd you go?
Well, first of all, so the thing about Pokemon Go is that they have these real-life meetups, right?
Listen, like, how excited Jeff gets about this.
So you have to go around and you have to collect them all, right? That's ostensibly the point. Like, you have to catch them all. So I went down to about two blocks away.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, there's a meetup. And how hilarious is it? I wonder if anybody's actually going to be there.
Sorry, these are... I just rewind it back. These are real human beings.
Real human beings in the real world going to these places all around the city and all around the world.
And they're all looking through their phones.
Yes.
Even you.
Well, okay, so I'm the guy who sits about 30 feet away
mm-hmm.
and is like, yeah, like I'm definitely like partaking in it, but I'm not, you don't know. I mean, you definitely know, but
oh, yeah.
but I'm sitting there and I'm like not acting like a part of it. And I'm taking pictures of all the dorks who are showing up. And then meanwhile, I'm King Dork sitting on the bench.
You've caught enough. You've caught enough Pokemon.
That I'm catching the Poke nerds.
Pokemen? What's the plural?
Oh my god. Pokemon? 1998. You sound like.
You've caught so many.
You sound like Sinbad talking about the Kardashians. Like, oh, like, the kids these days, what is this? The tweeter, twatter?
Yeah.
Twitter?
you're out there. You are King Pokemon or something.
I am.
You've achieved a level that is unheard of.
First of all, it's insane how good I've gotten at Pokemon. Yeah, thank you. Because I've just had my phone. I've lost all productivity for
Jeff,
the past five days.
Thank God you went to your high school reunion after you got off the Rihanna plane and not after you caught some what?
I caught Eevee. I evolved that into a water Pokemon.
Oh, my God.
It's got like 700 points. I just caught a Krabby while we were talking.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
can you please 150
tell, XP for me.
Please, can you please tell the people who is on today's podcast?
Today's guest is Director X, Woo! Formerly Little X.
The legendary music video director. Who's he worked with? He's worked with everyone from Jay-Z to Kanye to Puff Daddy.
Usher.
To Sean Paul.
Drake.
Aaliyah.
M.O.P.
The list, honestly, goes on and on and on. He's
like, he has a favorite video section on his website, and even that is too long.
It's unbelievable.
Or not long enough.
The impact that he's had on this culture. We were blessed to have him here. It's a great, great episode, and I'm really excited for the people to hear it. Jeff, when should we get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Canadian Club, a.k.a. Six Pack.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Theme for the Summer, a.k.a. Beach Body.
Yo, what up? It's Director X, Mr. Don't Get Me Vexed.
Yeah, this is a waste of time, but this is the real. X, what up?
Yeah. Am I allowed to be part of that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, okay.
You are.
Yeah. Didn't want to if I was infringing on like,
no.
friendship.
No. Listen, no, you are here. You are part of this now. You're basically our brothers.
I'm inside.
Yeah.
All right.
Before we get into all this, anyone listening at home, if you're just listening, you should know that there's a better way to experience this podcast,
yeah,
which is...
You can actually watch it on fullscreen.com/itsthereal.
Yeah. This is really our apartment, and if you really want to see what's going on, and you want to see what X looks like, and you want to see...
And you want to see all these naked chicks in here, you know what I'm saying? Doing that hip-hop lifestyle, you know what I mean?
Then go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal. What up?
What's going on?
Everything's good. How are you?
Life is good.
Good. What are you doing in New York?
I was doing a little thing for VH1. So
that's cool.
Yeah,
for the hip hop honors thing.
Yeah, you know, just working.
You flew in today?
I flew in yesterday.
And you're out tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Man, that's a quick trip.
Yeah, I was here. It was a pickup day, so we shot some people, and then I had to come back to shoot one more. And you know.
And you are getting ready to shoot a TV series.
Yeah, it's on Family Channel in Canada. I think I'm confused about who owns what where now.
Right.
Well, I think it's Disney here and Family Channel in Canada, and worldwide they got picked up. Called Backstage.
Nice.
It's a like
it's a Jay-Z documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. It's full of violence and sex. Actually, it's about
on the Family Channel.
On the Family Channel. You know, they're going for a different. They're trying to revamp their image.
It's 2016. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Everyone wants that dark night thing. Yeah. It's kids in a high school. It's school of the arts. I call it drums. Not quite drama.
Okay.
Drums.
Yeah. Sure.
And but one of the kids I was actually with the other day, they told me we beat Game of Thrones. One of these nights, yeah.
Like ratings-wise?
Rating. I don't know if they were like worldwide. Viewers or, I don't know what. But they're like, yeah, we beat Game of Thrones. So. All right. Well,
that's dope.
But yeah, the 12-year-old, 15-year-old market probably just dedicated. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
More dedicated than Game of Thrones.
So you are originally from Toronto?
Originally from Toronto,
like,
yeah.
Like born there?
Born, bred. I moved to New York when I was like 19.
What did your parents do up in Toronto?
My father was an engineer. My mother a nurse.
And so where does film enter your life?
Doesn't. But, you know, my father's Swiss, and he's from, a small village. My mother's from Trinidad, which is, you know, and they grew up in the 50s. So they're both artists,
mm-hmm.
but didn't grow up in places where being artists were things you could do, or at least like you didn't think you could do that.
So they did it on the side?
No, they didn't do it. There's some like there's like other people who the world stomped their childhood dreams deep into the ground, and they took on a responsible life. But you know, my father drew, and my mother danced a little. It's just the reality of our world. We don't even acknowledge that. Now everyone wants to be an artist.
Right.
Right.
But, you know, my parents' generation, small town, small country, immigrant families, there's art and then there's
commerce.
Doctor, lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's real jobs and you put that foolishness aside, you know.
Well, do you have any siblings?
Yeah, two sisters.
Older or younger?
Older and younger. Okay. I'm a middle child. So my eldest, I mean, we're all an artistic family, right? Mm-hmm. My eldest sister did not pursue it professionally. My youngest sister was part of a dance company, modern dance company, cool. Teaches dance and all that kind of stuff. So the younger ones kind of went there. The eldest, she should have, because even though she's, you know, she's in the medicine, she'll call me. She called me like, oh, Claudio, back when Claudio, when I was doing music videos, I don't know how she knew this. Goes, oh, you worked with Claudio Miranda. He's great. And you know, I'm sure you guys know him. Claudio Miranda shot The Life of Pi. He won the Academy Award.
Yeah. Yeah.
Claudio Miranda is just a genius director of photography. And we knew it when we were doing music videos. But I'm on the phone like, you're in Switzerland. How the hell do you know I worked with Claudio Miranda? So, you know, I mean, you can't stop an artist. An artist is an artist, whether or not you've fought for it or not, you know?
Well, so what was your first sort of artistic endeavor?
I mean, I've been drawing all my life. Like, before I could remember drawing, I was drawing. And just, I thought, my process was, like, when I was in grade school, I was in junior high, comic book artist. I definitely thought I was going to draw comic books. Then somehow from comic books, I found graphic design. Then I shifted into graphic design. And, oh, I'm going to be a graphic designer.
Right.
Then from graphic design, I found my way into filmmaking. And then here I am.
Well, does school support that, like, at all?
Not the school. I went to my early years, I had to fight the system. I went to, like, this Christian private school. You know what I'm saying?
They weren't encouraging of...
No, we're not encouraging... of art. They're very encouraging of learning all the books in the Bible.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So I can have me a solid Bible debate to this day.
Well, that's what we're here for.
That's right.
I thought, it's Bible debate, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've been listening to Kirk Franklin all morning.
Good. You're getting ready because Leviticus 4, verse 3.
I only know as much as Peppa's verse, but whatever.
So these were like sisters teaching you?
No. Like it was even worse than it wasn't Catholic.
Oh.
It was a Protestant. Yeah, so
we're Jewish.
Hardcore.
You got it.
Okay, so the Catholic school system is a full school system. They have schools and teams, and they kind of it's kind of like going to public school, but with uniforms. And occasionally they try and hit you with some God stuff, but it's just too big and loose. I don't meet a lot of kids from the Catholic system that feel like they got cheated out of childhood. Every child that went to a Protestant cheated. It was in the country and just really, it was like its own school. It's funded. It was just its own weird little thing. But I'll give them, they were not joking. It was very Protestant. Education was what it was.
Right.
So if you went to public school and you couldn't read and you came to KRT, you could read.
Really?
They sorted that shit. that got sorted out immediately.
But they could not get the art out of you.
No. And they tried. I mean, like, art was not art. It was like arts and crafts. It just was not a thing for them. It was a different kind of place.
And where do you find the arts, like, around Toronto?
When I'm a kid, I mean, it's me drawing comic books. That's where I found my art. I don't know maybe if that's why, now that we bring it up, I'm having a fucking moment of clarity right now.
Yeah.
That's why art comic books were the thing, because that's... was art, because that's where I bought my comics. I bought it for the illustrations.
Mm-hmm.
Then I read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And you're like, oh, there's words too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, pretty much. Bummer. And then if they change the artist, I literally was like, well, don't know what's going to happen. I don't need to hear anything else about these guys. And that was it. I was done collecting the book. So that was my way in. And then, I mean, I am, that's why I'm, right now, I'm a big defender of comic books and the culture and the intelligence and the art. And the movies are beginning to just now respect the source material and see that that's when they make all the money, when they just do what the book did. But I mean, growing up, they had these beautiful painted books. You have really various different styles. There's a lot of really great intelligent work happening in the comic book field. So it was a good education.
Does that mean when you saw the first Batman series, you were not into it.
Which one? The
89.
Yeah, like Michael Keaton.
Michael? No, no, yeah. Definitely for its day. Okay, it was. Yeah. See, that was the thing. But the reason why they could do Batman because Batman. We turned into a comic book podcast. Then.
Yeah, we're fucked.
But Batman, they could understand. You know, he wore a costume and he was a guy, so they kind of let it go. He had a car. It's kind of silly, and Tim Burton turned it into something cool. So I was with it. And I was too much of a kid to be like Michael Keaton can't be Batman. You know, like I said, that didn't compute to me. So
well, there also wasn't like an internet where you could voice said concern.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Or nor that was a concern you should have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, all right, that's Batman. And like I said, I was young, but it was still, it worked. And Superman seemed to work. But anything else? Do you remember the old, you guys seem young. What are you, your 30s?
I'm 23.
23? Yeah. Oh, you young guys, man. Don't mean to hit you with the old age. But yeah, so you're young. You don't remember like Marvel Comics used to do the worst. They would do these TV movies. And if you Google, you'll see the worst Hulk and the worst Thor. It was bad. Bad stuff, man.
So, well, yeah. Have you seen Batman versus Superman?
I have.
And thoughts?
I mean, look, okay, so Zack Snyder, Zack Snyder with a camera is untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
You know I mean, like, he is unbelievable. But I knew something was up with Zack Snyder story-wise from 300.
Right.
Remember 300?
Yeah, the movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Not the record label. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. So, the movie. We all love 300, but then there's this part in 300 where Leonidas' wife, remember when Leonidas' wife has sex with the bad guy?
I didn't see it.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, yeah. So there's a part where, like, the king, who's off to fight the war, his wife has sex with the bad guy so she can talk to the Senate, and we're all like, I don't like that part of the movie. It doesn't seem to make sense. And then when you go back to the book, that's not in the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's Zack Snyder fixing it for us.
Right.
And then bit by bit, he continues to try and fix things and fix things. So now he's fixed us all the way into Gotham City and Metropolis or across the water from one another.
Right. It needs some fixing.
He's just. I mean, whatever, man. It's just when he had Superman kill somebody, I knew. All right, we're just off the deep end.
Right.
And deeper on a symbolic level, I felt like it was the whole point of Superman was the idea that I have all this power. The whole point of superheroes, but really Superman, I have all this power. I can see everything, hear everything, move faster than you, fly, I'm strong, I'm indestructible, you can't beat me, and I could just kind of like crumple you into a little ball and toss you over my shoulder, but I don't because it's because I'm doing the right thing. I'm just the American way.
Right.
And then now Superman is, I won't kill you, but... There might be a situation where I might have to go against all my morals. And here we are today. You know what I'm saying?
So. By the way, if you were to fly around the world and then, like, reverse it, it would kill everybody.
It doesn't. That's not the key to reversing time.
Listen, we went to public school, so, like, you know, we could be way wrong.
I don't know
if
you went to Protestant school.
Can you talk about what Toronto was like growing up as opposed to what Toronto is today?
Toronto growing up...
Was
very,
there Drake?
There was no Drake. There was a prophecy of a Drake. One day, there shall be a rapper. Actually, I do kind of feel like John the Baptist when it comes to Drake. Being in Toronto, it was this town, and we're the big city in Toronto, but we're not on the map, right? And we're next door to America, so there's all this kind of like, right? So... The hip-hop scene was coming up a little bit. There are a few guys that everyone hated. They didn't hate each other, but no one believed. Then this guy named Maestro Fresh West, right? There's a bit of hip-hop history for you. Maestro Fresh West had a song, and it was on the radio, and it was on TV, and it was like a hit, legitimate Canadian hit, right? Mm. So it was like, oh.
Bigger than Game of Thrones.
Yeah. He beat Game of Thrones. He had better ratings at the time. So it was like, all right, so we got this guy. So the kids began, I remember being in high school at the time, feeling like, oh, wow, maybe we can do that stuff they do over there. And it started, like, he actually started like a little hip hop. There was artists like Kish and Mishy Me. And so there's like the little industry within Canada's own little vacuum, but it only existed in Canada. We had our own little scene. It was very West Indian, but the rappers were not. And you had people trying to pretend they're from New York. Like, there's still, yeah. As my generation came up, it was the beginning of the we're from Toronto and we're proud of it. And, I'm talking about White Plains. The Bronx. Like, literally. I can think of two songs where the guy's like, I met her in White Plains. On the train in White Plains. Like,
by the way,
that was the big rhyme.
That's so dope because we're from White Plains.
Yeah.
And nobody ever shouts at white boys. Yeah.
Well, you should have been in Toronto in the 90s. So, so we had that. And then you had, like, Cardinal, mm-hmm. who was like, I'm from Toronto. And then he even brought in the West Indian part of it. And West Indian culture is a big, it's kind of like Britain, where it has a larger effect. Like, in Britain, there's tons of Africans. But you all say bruv. And, like, this West Indian slang is mm-hmm. completely intermixed in. And Toronto's like that, too. If you said to a black kid, where are you from? They'd say, oh, Trinidad. They'd say Jamaica. Whether or not they're born in Canada or not, they'd say their parents. Which, even for Drake has always kind of been this outside guy. So everyone's like, where are you from? Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad. Where are you from? Memphis. it's never quite connected. So
where were you from?
Trinidad. My mother's from Trinidad. Asked, I said Trini.
You could have said Switzerland.
Or
White Plains, whatever.
White Plains, yeah. Only if I'm rhyming it with train. Yeah. Because White Plains get involved. But, yeah, so we go, that goes down, and then I'm in my filmmaking stage, and I come to New York, and I'm an intern, and that's why I feel like I'm the Morpheus to his Neo.
Right.
Because, all right, so we have some rappers locally, but no one's ever made noise in America on the hip-hop scene ever. Tons of rock acts,
right.
mm-hmm. actors, but as far as, like, our little subgenre, it almost feels like this can't be done.
So did you film anything with, like, any of those guys?
No.
Before you left town?
It's part of the story. I'm on the scene. Everyone knows me. But no one would give me... I'm like, even when I went down, I come back. Yo, I'm interning with Hype Williams. And everyone knew who Hype Williams is. Let me do your video that you have no money for, but I'll do. They're like, yeah, no. Because some other guy was hot.
Right.
Which, yeah, it's exactly. No one.
Yo, who's this other guy?
Yeah, exactly. David Cropper was the hot director at the time. He was shooting everyone's videos, and I just could not make my way in. You know what I mean? The guy you know that's out working with a hip-hop legend, they're still like, yeah, well, David's the bun down. If you want a bun down, David's the bun down right now. You understand bun down?
No.
Like, bun is burn.
Okay.
And he's burning it down.
Yeah.
Bund on right now.
But so, you were willing to do it for free.
Well, pretty much. Yeah. And I guess I wasn't the bund on. So, you're unbun. I was unbun at the time. So, which kind of freed me up on two levels. One, I didn't get stuck being in Toronto shooting videos. I spent my time in New York, you know, not shooting videos, but being on the sets of, like, LL Cool J and R. Kelly. And I'm like, I'm Hype Williams.
Yeah.
Right? I'm part of the inner circle. I was drawing storyboards. I'm doing all that kind of stuff. And as well, I learned a lot about, over time, you know, the world tells you, children's books are dangerous. That's good. Because they tell you about the importance of friendships and what friends do for one another. And then you get into the business and you learn, no.
Right.
They actually
there
don't.
There are no friends.
There are no friends, and they don't do. But if you're walking in there, like, you're my pal, and I'm going to da-da-da-da-da-da, you got to learn that it barely works in real-life friendships. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all just societal programming of what we wish. But I believed it. So if I had done those videos for those people, if they had shown me that, I would have felt obligated mm-hmm. to do something for them. But none of them did, luckily, so fuck them. But I get my thing together, and now I do. I did EPMD, Richter scale. So I was mm-hmm. like, wow, I did something. So that's the beginning. And then I started shooting, and so then as it became to be, I was Little X. Shooting. Well,
who gave you that name?
I got that back in, like, the X-Clan days when everyone was black and angry and conscious and mm-hmm. you know what I mean. I was Little X. You know, I'm light skinned, trying to make up for a lack of melanin.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So I came extra hard with my blackness. Yeah. I was extra black. They should have called me Little Extra Black. So
that sounds like a rapper from Memphis.
Exactly. This could work for somebody.
Yeah.
But now I come back to Toronto. But now they're, you know, I'm doing these videos. And they're seeing things happen. So for Drake's generation, where my generation is maestro, like, wow, maybe we could just do it. For Jake's generation, it's like, oh, maybe we could cross the border. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I was the first guy. And like I said, I'm John the Baptist because I was doing something that no one had to hate on. Rappers all hate on each other. There's all this jealousy,
right.
You know, especially if, you know, you're stealing their dream. If you make it and they don't, it's all this, I would have made it if he didn't do it. Like, stuff is going on. But I'm a director. Mm-hmm. No one wants to be a director. So they all got to, the whole city got to, like, cheer me on and see this guy who had done this thing. And then.
You know who wasn't cheering you on?
Who's that?
Davy Crocker.
David Cropper was not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I already forgot his name.
Exactly. Take that, David. Yeah. Bam.
So how did you meet Hype in the first place?
So when I was in Toronto, I was seeing music videos. Just around the time I'm getting interested in music videos, then I started seeing his music videos, and you could feel like there's art, and you could just feel the art. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, this is interesting. This dude's all right. So there's an article on him in Vibe magazine. So I sent this package of all my stuff, all my drawings, all my T-shirt I did, like all this stuff, and I sent it to them. Like I want a connection to Hype. Or I just want, you know, not his number, like what's his office number or something.
Yeah.
And couldn't get a response. Called up one day. And she gave me the number to the office and then hung up on me. Mimi Valdez. She managed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally, we all know, yeah. Mimi. Yeah. Tell Mimi. She changed my life. Mimi changed my life. So, and I still see her. She like manages. So, you know, she was like, da 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 da, click, click. And I'm like, boy, we must have got cut off. I mean, call her back to make sure she's not worried about me.
Very sorry.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. But that's the info I needed. So I got the number to the Hype's office and I sent out this thing and sent them the package. And here's again about friends.
Yeah.
Putties, pals. Mm-hmm. So I had a friend who lived in New York who was working for a director. So I sent my package to two people, the Hype William Camp and then my friend, this director who's nowhere near what the talent level, but he was, mm-hmm. you know, he was a director.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Send it to both of them. Send it to my friend, pal, buddy, cause friendship. You know what I'm saying?
These children's books, man.
I'm telling you, I want to do a real, like, the yeah. reality children's books.
Yeah.
The reality children's books.
Life is hard.
Yeah, you get fucked and then you die.
Yeah. Yeah.
By Director X.
Exactly, pretty much. There'll be versions for all different topics. But so... I sent it to her. She doesn't even show her boss. And their office was just him and her. That was who, you know what I mean? Like, they, yeah. He barely worked once in a blue moon.
Maybe it got lost.
Maybe it got lost. Then to Hype, it just got lost. You know, he's busy and all this stuff is going on. But so I'm calling. And they're like, well, we haven't seen it yet. Then I came to New York with like this big work program, get the kid off the street type jobs program in Toronto. So I came with that. And actually, I stayed on 96 in Columbus.
Right? Whoa, crazy.
Yeah, that's where my aunt used to stay.
It's a Whole Foods now.
Yeah.
The whole building. Yeah. They're taking out all the apartments. Yeah. So I was there and I called to go, all right, well, you know, have you guys seen it? And whoever answered the phone was like, we don't even know who you are. We don't know what you're talking about. I go, oh, I was 19. I was like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. How about I come get my shit? Like, I don't say it, but I'm in my head, like, I want the shirt back. I want all that shit back. Yeah, I want my shit back. Mm-hmm. So
it's like a breakup.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, yeah. So I go and go to the office, and then I see the people. There's the office manager. So I'm like, I'm showing somebody.
Yeah.
So you're going to watch this shit. You know what I mean? So I showed him. He's like, oh, you should wait till the manager comes, our producer. So the producer comes in. And I show her all my stuff. She goes, okay, yeah. I'm like, I just want to intern. I know I'm good enough to work for free, right? She's like, okay, come back in a month, okay? And then I go back to Toronto, and I just feel like Toronto, especially at that time, felt like this small town. It was very much like just this dead end kind of, you know, anyway, you know, man, working on music, you know? So it's like all your friends, it's everything just seems. And I left 2 weeks early
mm-hmm.
and came over here. Mm-hmm. And the day I walked into the office was the day she had quit.
Wow.
She was leaving. That was her last day in the office. Some serendipitous.
Yeah.
And now she works at VH1. I just saw her again. So, yeah. Yeah. The people, no one ever tells you the people you meet you're going to know for decades.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Like, no one ever leaves his industry.
No.
Yeah. Not at all. And then a few do, but rising. The vast majority, yeah. You're going to see him around. So, yeah. Luckily, I did that. But then the executive producer looked at me like, I don't know anything about this or who you are or what's going on. And I did a George Costanza and I just showed up the next day. Started working, and here I am.
Man, two things. One is, I think, like, persistence, especially with, like, people in today's age, is so underrated, you know? Like, if you're persistent, that's more than half the battle.
Completely.
Winning is the other half.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the third half is adding them on Instagram or Twitter.
Yeah.
No. Oh, God, no.
Just hit their mentions. That's all it takes, kids. All it takes is adding them on Instagram.
Do you, by the way, do you ever listen to anyone's mixtape that adds you on?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not the guy. Once you get to me, it means you've gone through the system.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm the wrong guy to give a mixtape because I just don't. And I learned a long time ago, he's my friend. He'll want to help me in my friend's music career. No, they don't. They don't. I'm a director. They don't think of me as a guy with a musical ear. They think of me with a guy with an eye.
Right.
Right. So I stopped doing anything along those lines. So I'm not the guy. And even if I thought it was great, I could give you words of encouragement.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I could maybe tell you about the hustle.
I'm not going to get you signed.
I'm not giving it to fucking nobody. You can't. Again, part of the real life lesson is people, it's in the 48 Laws of Power. which if you read, you should read a good spiritual book at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Tao Te Ching, I suggest. Yeah. Tao Te Ching. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I did it.
Yeah, but then you become Wu-Tang.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what I mean? The book is a fucked up book. It'll hurt. It'll do weird shit to you. But anyways, they do say, like, you can't... When people see you coming, they should be like, oh, you guys. Mm-hmm. Not right. Like, oh, these guys.
Right.
And if you start coming out of your lane and asking people for things... Then it's gonna. They don't know if you're. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't know what it's gonna be. Is it? Is he coming for me for the thing I like him for? Is he coming at me for some thing that everyone asks me for? And I mean, like, if you imagine being a successful A&R, what your life is like?
Oh my God.
How many people? You know what I mean? Like. No. So I get out of that. So if by the time you get to me, as a musician, that means someone's. You've done the hustle. Someone believes in you. Yeah. You've recorded the songs. They've had discussions. We're going to put money into this. And again, for me, someone said, we're going to put a good chunk of money into this.
Right.
Like, you've reached a point once we're having that discussion. The kids who at me, they at me just like, hey, man, really want to work. Would really appreciate. I saw my Twitter today. Could someone make me a creative director for a music video? No one could make you that, except you.
Yeah. So as soon as you assume that title, then you become that.
Yeah. It says something about. I don't know if it's this generation. I don't want to get on millennials. Maybe just. I can't. Look, I told you what I had to go through to get the phone number of the Hyperlane's office.
Yo.
Now you punch in his name, and then his website would come up, and then his website would say contact.
Contact.
Right. And then like the. So I just can't. I can't regard the kid. Who doesn't have in this age enough wherewithal to find out how to actually get a hold of me.
Right.
If they just think, well, I have his Instagram, he should hit me back. Hey, X, I want it. And then they think that shows me your hustle. You don't have a hustle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Especially for hip hop. Hip hop came from selling CDs out of your trunk. And there's this whole process that showed how dedicated you are to it. So that kind of thing. It just shows me.
Well, what if they at you a bunch? How's that for dedication?
But you know what? I would almost don't. Hopefully none of these kids see this shit. But I would respect that a little bit more. Because honestly, they don't at you a bunch. They at you once.
And then they go on to the next person.
That's right. If you look at that person's timeline, it's just like adding you, adding Hype, adding you know, Benny Boom, adding like anybody who they can think of who's a director. Yeah. The same message.
And then that's it. It's never like. Because Sean Kingston. I remember I asked him how he got discovered. He got discovered in the MySpace days.
Mm-hmm.
But he would not stop messaging JR.
Yeah.
He constantly was fucking...
yeah.
Made his decision.
Right.
And was going at him. And that, you know, he's Sean Kingston.
Yeah.
And JR wrote him, by the way, kept adding the coasters to be like, hey, clear this sample so I can use it.
That's right. Another thing I wanted to mention, by the way, is that we met a couple of times. Jeff and I met you a couple years ago outside of like the Highline, I think.
Yeah, at a concert.
And I told you this story, which was I interned at a company called Notorious Pictures here in New York years ago, right, when I was in college. And they did documentaries and music videos and other commercials and whatnot. And one of the projects that they had was a re-edit of a Hype Williams video for Kobe Bryant's first video.
Oh, wow.
With Tyra Banks.
Yes.
And you and Tyra and the editor and intern me sat in that session and went through this edit, which was, like, incredible. So...
You sure that was me or Hype?
No, that was you.
It was me?
That was you.
Did I go with Tyra? I remember I used to hang out with Tyra. I don't really remember that moment.
No.
Wow. But I do remember I used to hang out with Tyra a bunch.
Yeah.
How's that for hip hop? Yeah. Huh? Bam. Wow, that's funny.
Okay. So you get into New York. You're working with Hype. What, besides doing the storyboards, like, what are you learning in terms of, like, cinematography and lighting and...
How to get coffee.
Yeah, all that.
Well, I mean, the main thing I learned from Hype was that a director should know all these departments. Like, Hype really... knew them all. Like, you know, he would... I remember I'd be driving around with him because we were picking up clothes that he liked and he wanted, wear this jacket, you know what I mean? And he just knew cinematography. He knew editing. He could get on the machine and do an edit himself. Like, he understood all these departments, art department, because that's where he came from. So I began to get that idea of what a director was. And I saw other directors who they didn't know anything, right? And still don't really know much. They know, you know, there's a point you do learn, but not in the way that Hype was doing it. So it was just, I learned that from him. Like, okay, you got to know this stuff. So really, like, in IntelliCine, trying to figure out, what is going on here? What are you doing with these color wheels? How does that, you know, this is a mid-tone. This is a highlight. This is this and that. So that was the big, big lesson just by being around, you know. then when I started directing, the bigger lesson out of that was I was kind of learning about it, kind of looking, kind of had an idea. Then I did Tracy Lee featuring Busta Rhymes, and it was a mess. It was a fucking total disaster.
Where was it?
It was on a stage, but I just was out. I didn't have what. It's the beginning when you win the learn. Sitting beside the hot seat, and you know you work for the guy in the hot seat, so you're beside the hot seat all the time. You're really close to the hot seat, and so much so you're like. It's practically like I'm in the hot seat. I'm beside it so much. You know what I'm saying? Then one day you sit in the hot seat. You go, oh, whoa. Being in the hot seat and beside the hot seat are not the same fucking thing.
Right. There's at least 2 feet different.
That's right.
Exactly. So, you know, once I got in the hot seat, I realized, oh, well, fuck. I don't know shit. The want to know, knowing that you should know is not the same as knowing. So I went back into my cave and just went to the bookstore and bought every book I could on filmmaking and just read through it. Makeup. Lighting, everything, you know what I mean? And then the next job I did, Def Jam gave me this little Cormega promo. And I shot the promo. His idea was horrible. His idea was horrible. His acting was awful.
Mm-hmm. Can you say what the idea was?
He was redoing the scene from Scarface where they're interrogating him. Mm-hmm. And the camera's going around and it was just, but it was, you know, who's this? And he's like, picture of Nas and whatever. But he was like, say no more. Oh, okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But the two things that was interesting is being in New York and knowing through Hype's relationships, I said, let's light it like Clockers. I don't know if you remember Clockers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But remember that, remember the interrogation where this fucking giant highlight is blooming off and all this stuff? I knew Malik Said because that was Hype's, one of Hype's good friends. So I asked Malik, what did he do? He goes, oh, this is four stops over and I used this fucking Promise filter and it did the bloom. And they go, okay. So I had that kind of access. And then actually reading, I knew what I was talking about. And like, so as I'm setting things up with my DP, I'm like, scrim that light. And then I'm talking. I said that. And I'm right. That made sense. But we took that job. And then we took a song that Cormega had and we shot like a verse and chorus in the basement of the studio. So I had his horrible commercial, but I had a little tiny bit of a music video that we had shot. And I gelled everything interesting colors, and I was just kind of free with it. And that's what gave Def Jam. They said, all right. And that's when kids ask me, like, oh, what should I do and how do I get a gig? I tell them now, dig into your subculture.
Mm-hmm.
Don't run up to, like, Sony. Hey, Sony. I haven't, like, they're never. It's never. Just don't. Dig into your subculture where they understand. You understand skateboards or hip-hop or hip-hop skateboarding or what, you know what I'm saying? Whatever little niche you happen to exist in, go and embrace that and shoot that stuff.
Right.
So you can build your name and do, you know what I mean? They'll give you the shots. And luckily, you know, hip-hop had record labels. So it was Def Jam. It was like, man, well, you've done one $15,000 thing for us. Here's a whole music video. Never. And then Bad Boy was the other people who gave me a shot. They're the other ones who gave me music. I did a Black Rob video.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no one would have given me these opportunities.
Who were the video commissioners that you dealt with?
Oh, back then, there was no... I mean, it was like Kevin Lyles and Julie Greenwald and, you know what I mean? They're like, I guess...
Actual executives, yeah.
That was 160 Varick days.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that office really well. I remember the offices and the... I remember the whole thing. And, yeah... It's weird what you remember when you're young. I can remember all that. I can't remember going editing with Tyra Banks.
Yeah.
But I can remember Kevin Lyles sitting on his couch saying, yeah, let's go for this. Let's give it a shot. I remember Puff's office. He was in the Times Square office at the time. And him giving me the shot to do the Black Rob thing. And then, yeah, then from there I was able to really start.
What was the weirdest thing that was in Puff's office?
I don't remember anything weird beyond just him. Just you know, I remember on one day... I thought I had a meeting with him. So my friend and I we go up and we go into the office and we're sitting there. And he's like, oh, well, what's up? I go, I thought we had a meeting. Oh, no. We don't have a meeting. I can go. And as I leave, my friend goes, well, now you know you can go to the Puff at any time. Yeah, but everything exists in a moment. I don't know if I could still just run up on the office.
What was the...
Maybe the house.
What was the first video that you did that you knew, like, this is my aesthetic?
I mean, I'll Be That was interesting.
Yeah.
It's,
great video.
Yeah.
That changed everything. But when it actually re-clicked, it was in 2000. It was, I don't know. I did I'll Be That at Big Dog, Hype's company.
Mm-hmm.
Real small, no pressure, still Def Jam, not the labels. And then that blew up. And then I'm doing these other videos. And then I signed to like this big company. And they're like, here's a Range Rover. Here's an office. Here's an assistant. Here's like, and I'm like, you know what I mean? It's like the rapper that does his first album in his bedroom. And then he's doing it in the big studio and he loses his inspiration.
Yeah.
Because also I did a 99, I did horrible, horrible work. But you see the beginning of things, but I just couldn't get it. And then in 2000, I did Donnell Jones, Where I Want to Be, that Claudio shot.
Great video.
You know what I mean? I started getting in, I was beginning to find myself. A lady, oh, there you go. Really obscure video was Changing Faces, Ladies Man.
Huh.
And it was, I've been trying to do these set driven things, but no one would get it. It was just like, trust me, to do a set, no one could quite. They just wouldn't bite. And then Ladies Man was small enough a budget. And again, the managers were people who did, he managed Tracy Lee back in the day. So I had a relationship with the manager. So I have these ideas and to go for it. And then if you see that video, it's like I did, and I can't believe we did it for like only 100 plus grand. Now this would cost at least $300,000 to $400,000. Mm-hmm. I built three sets. I took giant wooden sets, planks of wood, and I stained them all different colors. So it'd be like, there's one set that was stained green wood. It'd be a great spa. It looks like we shot in a spa or something like that. So I it's green tinted wood, and then I put like a blue line of blue wood
mm-hmm.
into the set. And then there was a yellow set that had a yellow line, and like that whole thing that I was doing. I did a pink set that had a red line. And there you began, it didn't do well commercially, but for me, I was like, ah. Oh.
You're Mark Rothko.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I knew this is what I liked. I knew this clicked. And you began to actually see, if you look at it, you know, like, oh, whoever, I do my set designs, right? I've from the very beginning, I've been designing it and working with the art director as opposed to hoping someone comes, design me a set.
Yeah. Yeah. And do it right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd say this is what the theme is. This is what we're doing.
Well, because no friends, right?
Right. Exactly. No friends. Well, and just, I mean, that was my art background. Now I can see how my comic book graphic design interests actually, how they served and serve me now. As especially music videos, the graphic design element of it, which you could see, this guy, oh, it's very graphic. These guys are what this guy's up to. And then comic books, as I move into film, and just it gave me a sense of story and gave us our nerd, I call it the nerd standard, you know?
Like Pharrell and Chad?
No.
No, more yeah. like Just Blaze.
Well, more so like, you know, nerds have a high standard for their stuff. We love our things. And when you hand us, you can't just say to a nerd, well, you know, well, why the bad guy die? Well, you know, it's a movie. The bad guy has to die.
Right.
Like, we need to know, you know, we need this standard. And that's what I bring into my projects and have my discussions when I'm in Hollywood. I bring in that nerd standard. We just, you know what I mean? If the script just has a bunch of, well, you know, movie.
So wait, so Changing Faces, and then from that, it's like, what, Sean Paul?
Yeah, then that's when we started to enter the Sean Paul generation. Let's get it. That's when it grew into me really knowing what I'm doing with what I'm doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Give Me the Light, Let's Get It, even Cardinal Official's Old Time Killing.
Mm-hmm. With the red, yellow, and green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because he didn't have a lot of money. So this was friendship and he was, you know, he signed. He had some money and this is my friend. It's not like you can never have a friend and screw forget, you know what I mean? But you shouldn't be lowering. Right. Or they shouldn't be lowering for you. You guys, it should be a equal, maybe just a little above and beyond, in the zone of okay, debatable. It should at least be a debatable how you're helping one another, and then that can rock. And so with that, it was like, all right, we have a psych. Like, how do I make something graphic, but I don't have the money for sets? And then I could just paint right on the wall. So that's when I started painting on that for a little while. That reverberated through hip hop too. There's a bunch of videos who are like, oh, we can paint on walls too. So all these people, they always, the copycats are always just did too much with it though. It was very, I didn't really see, I know what I can think of. Well, that's the thing. The people who had the talent to have done it right also have the integrity to not steal so blatantly.
Correct.
So the ones that were stealing always just did it bad. I always just did too much shit. And then, okay, so here's a level. Here's a story about friends. All right. So. My friend has artists. He's my manager now, right? Mm-hmm. And he's managing these artists, okay? So I'm, you know, he's my friend. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing something for his artists. So I do their videos. And they had like 20 grand. In the days of $400,000 videos, I'm in Toronto doing like $20,000 videos. No fee. We're just doing this thing. Right. So one of the artists, I did two, three videos for this girl. again, no charge. That would be the fee. Like, it was just the budget and the people that are coming in, the type of video she's getting for this money, to turn around and fucking start saying that we stole her money. She goes, where'd all the money go? You mean that video where I had someone sleeping on my couch, the guy, right. You know what I mean, a DP that I flew from America and slept on my couch to go and do this thing? Yeah. They have no understanding. So that's what I mean. Just, what is it? No good deed goes unpunished. Mm-hmm. Don't listen, kids. Don't do it. If it don't make, and you'll learn as you get into the business, you'll learn that you think you have a relationship with someone that should do a favor for you, mm-hmm. and they'll say no because it doesn't. Which, and they're not wrong. That doesn't fit me, right? And but the world tells you, you know, friends and movies are wrong about everything to do with human relationships. You know, they're everything.
Even Superman, who's not human.
True.
Yeah.
Boom.
Wait, so Benny Boom, speaking of Boom, was your, he worked for you? He was your intern or something?
No. Benny.
Or your assistant?
No. He was an AD. So when Benny was, you know, he's a working crew guy. You know, he'd be on this set and that set, and he was being a second on a couple jobs. And so he was the second on DMX. Oh, so here's a story here's the turning point. This is where the aesthetic came. This was actually the event. So I get DMX, What's My Name, and Claudio. So my production company says, here's this guy, Claudio. He's a gaffer, and he's starting the DP. And they show me, like, all these country videos. So I go for it. I go and put Claudio on, and who knows that he's going to become Claudio. And then Benny is the second AD on the job. I'm like, here's this AD, and he's the best AD in the world, and you gotta work with him. So I'm putting this video together. I'm literally saying, it's gotta be warm because they like warm light, and it's gotta be really bright because everyone likes bright, and we need lots of girls, and so I'm trying to make this video for the client. So we shoot the first day, and we have this big set, and it's the brightest shit, and there's girls and guys, and it's just a bunch of chaos, and it just fucking sucks. And DMX gets annoyed, and he gets sick. He said, Benny didn't believe him. He's fucking faking. Anyways, I'm like, I'm out. But we didn't finish the video. So then on the second day, because the AD, that was the guy, and I had to work with, he's like, I'm out too. So I'm like, all right, Benny, you're the AD. And Claudio, fuck this. Gel the lights red. And then on this one, gel it green. And this one, gel it blue. And I don't want chicks. Just get me the Rough Rider guys. Just give me a bunch of Rough Rider t-shirts. That's why, so that video is two different videos. There's this brightly lit, this is what they want, this is what I think they want, trying to make everyone happy. And then it's like, fuck y'all. Yeah. And that's the energy. If the whole video had been Rough Rider shirts and guys and just gel light, it would still be a classic video.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that was the moment when I realized, fuck these guys. Yeah. Fuck what people are telling me. And I started to go down the lane of fuck your opinion. Me. And that's when I started doing the good work. Art is a selfish process. It has to be a selfish process. And the moment you start thinking about what people are going to like, that's when you fuck it up. Even if what you're saying, what people like, is the thing you did that people liked. You go and do a video, and we're going to have people dancing on the couch, right? And then everyone loves it. The dancing on the couch is crazy. And you're like, you know what people like? Dancing on couches. Next video, we're going to do dancing on the couch. And then you do the video, and everyone's like, oh, it's okay. But I thought dancing, you can't, at least for me, it's never worked like that. It doesn't, I just think that art has to come from a pure place. And the moment you walk to the canvas with thoughts of red, if I do this red, people are going wrong. Walk to the canvas like, I'm a genius, and no matter what I do, will be amazing. Wrong. It has to come from a pure, humble place for you to make things that people engage with. Mm-hmm. I've never done a job where it's a jinx to me, but people do it all the time. This has to be amazing. We've got to make the greatest video in the world. Well, now we're not going to because you fucking said that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, what was it like working with Kanye?
Kanye was what was interesting about Kanye, he wanted to do this video. He wanted to shoot it himself. He wanted to fund it himself. And I remember the conversation I had with him was like, he didn't want to spend like an extra 50 grand or something like that. You know, it's spending a lot of money already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I told him, look, man, cheap, fast, good, pick two. You know what I'm saying? You can have cheap and fast, it ain't going to be good. Mm-hmm. You can have good and fast, it ain't going to be cheap. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. this is how this game works. And he was like, oh. And he spent the money. Mm. And he made the workout plan. It was a fun video to do. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it was fun.
Well, what about working with Nelly?
Which one, Furtado or Nelly?
No,
rapper
like,
Nelly.
Yeah, rapper Nelly.
Rapper Nelly's E-I great. And... Yeah, he's great. Humble guy, good to work with. You know, he never got really super involved in the creative. He let that ride, but he's a good guy to work with.
Do you need an artist to be super creative with you?
I like it. I prefer it now. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe when I was 24, I was bubbling with ideas, but you know, I'm older now, and just hey, I got my head's in a little bit of a different place. I like an artist that walks in and says this. Even like Hotline Bling was my concept, but they said, "We love your Sean Paul videos." You know what I mean? So although I did pitch him, I pitched two things. I pitched him the performance video, and I also pitched him a video where he was, it was basically the Silver Lining Playbook. Mm-hmm. And he was at a dance competition with his dance partner, and then his ex-girlfriend was also at the dance competition with some new guy, and that was the big tension. Obviously, they didn't go for that. It never even got mentioned again. But I like an artist like Iggy Azalea. Mm-hmm. Knows what she wants to do. Hmm. Right? If Iggy Azalea, I would make Iggy Azalea like a commercial creative if I could point her in that. Yeah, she knows her audience. Hmm. She knows what she wants to do. Like, the Clueless thing was her idea. Mm-hmm. Black Widow was her idea. She's like, I want to wear this outfit. I wanted to do this. And, you know, she saw the bikes. And she's like, that's why she puts her name as a director, because she's actually a creative force in the process.
And same with Kendrick? And all of TDE, whatever?
No, the TDE guys more so have a direction. Like, oh, we think we want to go here with it. Mm-hmm. Or as, like, for King Kunta, mm-hmm. I can't remember if they said, let's do Compton or how. I think they might have said, let's do Compton. And then they saw Treatment. And then say, oh, let's do this thing. I want to have, as we're shooting, like, remember that shot where he's on the throne and we pull back, yep, and everyone kind of mm-hmm. gets in? Mm-hmm. That was Dave. Like, I got this idea. I want to, we start in Kendrick and we pull back. So, like, they have a shot that they have. It wasn't like, I have this full concept. There's much more of a partnership and an input. But I do believe that your instinct connects you to something, right? Again, I get it. It's a little bit of a spiritual thing where I think managers and artists have a connection to the creative process. Managers more so in the artist. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's something, but it's their art. There's a thing going. There's definitely a line for them in my book that involves the actual art. But if they're like, oh man, that jacket, he needs a better, like the package is his life.
Right.
So when it comes to the package, yeah, I trust them. Like, ah, that's, you know, this spoon, fine. That's your thing. You live with that all the time. There's a million different outfits before appearances that you deal with and things like that way. The artists themselves, the whole way, they, even if they have a bad idea, I did a video for Drew Hill. Mm-hmm. And I remember I did, it was in the industry, especially back in the label days, there's always a bit of the label on the low. It's the same way, like, all creatives think their client. Everyone thinks the person they're technically working for are total idiots, and they have all the answers, right? So Cisco is like, I want to do this stage design, and I want the stage to be red. And I'm like, red? That sucks. We're not doing red.
Red is out.
Red's out. We're doing black. And then I'm in the telecine. They're wearing black. The stage is black. You can't see anybody. I go, wow, this would have been better if it was a red stage. So, and then it was the beginning of my process, beginning to understand that it's not, there's certain, your instinct in the job, your seat, your position connects you to an instinct to it that's different than your skill level, right? So you might be, you're a director, you're young, you're just starting out, but you're the director. And if the instinct says to you, it's too dark, mm-hmm. even if you're working with Claudio. Mm-hmm. He said, no, it's fine. They'll try, oh, it's not too dark, and the thing will, and they'll tell a bunch of bullshit. And I guarantee I've never been in a situation where a DP told me it wasn't what I thought it was, and then he was right. They're always wrong. Not because I'm fucking so much smarter than my DP. I could practically shoot this myself, man. It's not that. It's not a matter of it's that your instinct is connected to your job.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if the artist is like, I want a red stage, I now don't even argue it. I make it red. Even if I think it's a horrible idea, because they're connected to this thing in a way
that you're not.
That they're the one above me. So there's them and their instinct, and then my instinct, then my. But everyone comes below. The DP gets to have lights. The mm-hmm. art director gets to have art direction. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have the whole thing, and this guy, it's his. He's really ultimately who's going to live with it. So it's now I live by it. So yeah, if an artist wants to say, because you know, they know what they like. Mm-hmm. Their audience likes them for their taste, without fully, you know what I mean? They chose the song, they chose the lyrics, they chose all the shit. So yeah, it might be crazy, but that's, in their world, that works.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
For Hell Yeah Fucking Right, Had you been to a bar mitzvah before?
No. They're like that, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've never been to a bar mitzvah, but everyone became my Jewish...
consultants.
Completely. Yeah. Every Jew on set was like, I am Jewish. Yeah. Let me tell you how this goes.
Birdman's like sitting there. He's like, no. You leave right to left.
Yeah, completely. Everybody, literally everybody. So, yeah, it was a fun one, though.
Yeah, Drake actually DM'd us the day of to be like, you guys should be down here.
And we're like, so are you sending a G5 for us, like, to fly down to Miami?
Yeah, do we get a trailer?
Yeah.
You should have come down.
We should have come down. When did you first implement the opening of, like, the letterbox at the beginning of the video and then the closing of it at the end?
Fabulous, y'all can't deny it. Yeah. That was, and it wasn't my idea. It was my editor at the time.
Really?
It was Cat Brown. Yeah. So he just, this thing opens up. And it might have been actually Bootylicious. And then, yeah, it was Bootylicious. He did it. And then he did it again on Fabulous. So I'm like, oh, this is what we're doing? He goes, yeah, this is what we're doing. And that was it. And,
that became like your calling card.
Yeah, it was. And then now everyone does it.
Everybody does it.
So now I do this one. I had to switch it, but it doesn't have. Not as many people know. You have to be real nerd to understand that I've switched the letterbox.
Yeah.
Whoa, dude, he switched the letterbox angle, man. Like, it's not.
And then you shot the 4x3 for.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the full. I did for Kinto. Yeah, I did the full square. First, I framed it 4x3, and then I said, "No, let's make it square." It just felt like, so we just adjusted a bit because it spoke to the internet age.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, totally. This is...
It's an Instagram box.
Yeah, I'll tell you how I tell us any of that. I took the video, and I started grabbing stills on my iPad, just clicking stills. Then I took those stills and put them into Instagram and sent them to my manager, because back then you would have to send the thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I was sending pictures to my manager, and then after I'd apply a filter, send it to my manager, and then show the Telecine artist, there you go. So the actual look of King Kunta... are Instagram filters.
Whoa.
It is fully an Instagram inspired piece. Except for the thing on the thing on the throne was some weird, like, we're doing some look got on top of that footage and it made it this crazy thing. Oh, whoa, that's crazy. That's dope. Leave that.
What other mistakes have you kept in that really, like, changed a whole video?
Are there any, like, what I think is a big, I don't think there's any, like, nothing that's coming right to mind as far as, like, a mistake that stuck around. That was one of the.
It wasn't like the Sean Paul, like, give me the light. It was like, oh shit, the everything is black. So
put the lights in the sets.
Yeah. And when did you start noticing people stealing your aesthetic?
Immediately.
Immediately. Yeah. Exactly. Right away. I don't know. I think people started. Oh, Let's Get It. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
The Let's Get It video. People were like, we're stealing that. Right, and then Peaches and Cream, and I just began to see that style, and then Sean John. Yeah, well, he took it for himself, but Cardinal Fishaw began to see it, right? So things like that. And when I was really young, I'd see, like, artists actually take little bits of style, like, you know, it was really the book of The Tipping Point or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had an intern who was just, you know, he's like 16 and always had street style, like, you know, he's from Harlem, and he'd come in and he would tie a bandana around his arm. Then I'd do that. And then LL Cool J would see that and then do that. You know what I'm saying? You'd see, I could see the line of influence happening.
Have you ever taken an idea, like, years before that didn't work for some artist and use it later on?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Actually, so I just did a Zane video, Like I Would. And the version that is on YouTube is an atrocious destruction of my work. No, so yeah, I didn't say this in the Teeny Bopper interview, but we're on a podcast and we can be honest about it.
Yeah.
But that was me wanting to redo Usher. So I did after it was said and done, so I should have done that all lasers.
Hmm.
I should have just done everything in the laser world, and that would have been a classic piece of work. Instead, I tried to do the lasers as a performance, and it's just the stars did not align on that gig. So I do this Zane gig and I redo it. I'll show you guys the director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the one. What I did is some of my best work, from the edit to the color correction to everything. But the management had different ideas and crossed that line of where they should be participating into, like, recoloring and editing and the whole thing. And I mean, it's cool, but it's not.
Well, that's what it's like to be in a boy band.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Completely.
Completely. Like, you have an idea, and it's like, nope.
Yeah, well, and beyond that, yeah, it was completely some boy band shit. Like, I know what I'm doing. It was a weird thing, but yeah, it was, yeah, like I said, what if he had, if they had gone with what my director's cut, it goes right up there as some of my best work. Mm.
The work video that you did up in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
because... What's it like to go home now, all these years later, and be so established and still go to spots that maybe you remember from growing up?
I mean, you know, it just gets my Toronto card is fully stamped.
Yeah, and, do you get free food anywhere?
Mr. Jerk gives me free food. Yeah. Like, it's fine.
Mr. Jerk is like a great name.
Yeah. That Mr. Jerk used to be a classic piece of Toronto. Like, you know, there's certain shops that there's almost like Hogs and Heifers, mm-hmm. which is now shut down.
Yes, yeah, it is. Yeah,
which is now like a travesty of fucking
fine real estate. Down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's gonna be right across the street from the Standard.
The Standard, yeah. Like the shut down Hogs and Heifers. Can we have this moment for a second?
Yeah.
This is that is when you know it's over. That was the symbol that it is over.
What was that movie that
Coyote Ugly?
And you know who was in that?
Tyra
Banks.
I do remember going to Hogs and Heifers with Tyra because she was researching that movie.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Don't remember our edit, but I remember Hogs and Heifers. But but it was a great fucking bar. We all know what it was, and it was a symbol of that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. In the same way, I don't know, it'd be crazy to do, but fuck it. It should have been protected. It should have said, no, this business itself, or at least be ironic and just leave the outside the same, and then when you walk in, it's your shitty fucking clothing store.
Right. CBGB's is now John Varvatos.
Right.
You know?
It's like, you guys, what's happening in Toronto?
The Best Buy Theater is now the Sony PlayStation Theater.
Yeah, I know.
It's like the city's changing.
I know.
What's happening?
To protect our culture.
What is happening out here? What is, I mean, hey, man, the shit fucking happens. Anyways, whatever tirade I was just on.
Oh, Mr. Jerk.
Mr. Jerk was one of those places. It was this building in Toronto that had a whole sidewall. Like, everyone knew Mr. Jerk, even if you've never eaten there. There's another place called Sam the Record Man that was in a bunch of movies in the 80s because it just was these big rotating records. So the city was like, these are places you knew. They're just iconic. And then, you know, lease got up and they got shut down. And, like, customers were protesting. Everyone was really upset that it moved. So that Mr. Jerk in the video is the new Mr. Jerk.
Gotcha.
So for the city, that's like, oh! You know, that's not just like some restaurant.
Right.
That's Mr. Jerk. It's like, yo. So, you know what I mean? That's a moment for them. And then for the staff, that's some real West Indian pray to God thing. Mm-hmm. Now we have a, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, my Toronto car is well and good.
Would you agree that hype is known for color and you're known for shadow?
That's kind of racist.
Wow.
That's fucking that's fucked up. That's
that
fucked up.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying.
And I meant it. Yeah.
Double down. Yeah. Double down. That's interesting. Maybe. I don't know. I've never really thought of it that way. That's kind of good. What gives you that?
Watching your videos.
Yeah. I'm a shadowy guy.
Yeah. I mean, like, just I think that the way that you light a lot of your videos, there's a lot of shadows. I think that hype has, you know, those sort of outlandish colors. And I think that you have, it's more of like the dark overshadowing the light.
Specifically the Donnell Jones video.
Yeah specifically.
Yeah. Great video.
Yeah.
Talk about the difference between the big money days and those like 2005 and forward years.
Yeah, it was. I mean, videos were on TV, and we were legitimately competing with other forms of entertainment. We were going up against your TV show. We're going up against, you know what I mean, MTV. That's what they showed. They showed videos in their big, spectacular events. Not everyone, one of them was great, but everyone was going for it. And I remember Buster and I were joking about it. Like, when we had money, we were entertaining. We were chased by elephants. People were jumping out of airplanes. We were blowing shit up. Like, we were, like, when human beings, that the economic bubble does say something about humanity. When we got money, we share and we help. And I remember just money was flying everywhere. And then when it contracted, it was, you know, now we're fighting over scraps. Now we're getting Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Or not.
Right.
Down in the polls, baby.
Yeah.
I think the novelty's worn off.
Yeah.
Because look, even his his rallies are getting less people.
Thank God.
Yeah, less Thank people God. Getting like beaten.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, they saw it. They saw it already. Yeah. He's already it's like, I'm over it. But so back
now
and so.
The one getting beaten. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So we had that big money. Then as the money started to go down, it's still. I mean, I was operating in a budget range where I was still able to work, but you couldn't build big, giant sets. I could still build something and do, like, Ying Yang Twins. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The Whisper song was that moment that, at the time, I was like, oh, it's only 200, which now is, like, 200. Like, it's just all... But as that happened, digital came into play. YouTube came into play. So as one side of the business was contracting, another one was expanding. Because if we didn't have digital, we could have gone back to 16-millimeter music videos. It would have been an ugly... Ugly time.
Was the Whisper song the best casting call that you've had to? It's just like 4,000.
I know.
It's all.
Can I see you laying on the floor, please?
Yeah. It's all relative, and it's all. I mean, nah. There's no. Actually, you know the best casting call I remember being like, "I'm Hulk. I'm gonna keep this tape." was Mystical Danger.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, I remember looking. Wow, this is. Actually pretty fucking amazing. I'm going to hold on to this. That VHS is actually somewhere. But yeah, the earlier days, especially, and I was also like in my early, like mid-20s, mm-hmm. 23, 24, so it was a lot
you
more.
You got that Range Rover, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was...
Helicopters.
Pew, pew, yeah. Pew, pew. Now, it's just, you know, a casting's a casting at the end of the day.
So did that period of lesser budgets and music videos make you want to move away from doing music videos, or was it sort of just like... I have to move away from music videos.
No, it's nothing. It's the game. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't... Because everyone keeps on framing it. Like, my friend just texted me the other day, like, you don't do music videos anymore. You're going to do movies and TV.
Is that David Chopper?
Yeah, David Cropper.
David Cropper, yeah.
No, it's just... But I don't feel that way. There's always this stigma on music videos. Like, it's a lesser form.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not.
Right.
At all. I never felt to move away from music videos. The budgets went down, and it's just that's what we're doing. Even now, as... I move forward into other parts of the game. I still love doing a music video because there's no other part in the game where you get that kind of freedom, right? Where, like, do you know, if Hotline Bling was a commercial, the amount of people and fucking foolishness that would have gone on from the edit to the set, everything would, if it was a movie, depending on who I'm working with, but it still would have been a bunch of new opinions. And if it was a TV show, Jesus Christ, you know, producers and writers, there's a whole world of people that get to be involved in the creative process. Mm-hmm. In the music video, it's me. These are the sets, and these are the decisions, and this is what we're doing. There's no committee that I'm going back to. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather, if you gave me a bunch of directors, and I said, I got to give these guys a project to see their skill level, I'll give them a music video to do. I wouldn't ask them to do a movie. I wouldn't ask them to do a TV show. I would not ask them to do a commercial because those processes, if they did it the way they're done, involve a bunch of other people who you could duck and hide behind. In a music video, it's you. It's your idea. That's your crew. You boom.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you walk in and say, light everything blue and put some red gels on these lights down here and let off and fill the room with smoke. Okay. In any other process, like, well, that's pretty extreme X. I think we should talk to ABC. Mm-hmm. And maybe in a movie, depending on who you're working with, they'll let that. You know what I mean? Like, the music videos and movies are the places where you're going to get the most play, right? But again, a movie, you do a studio movie, it's like, no, we're not doing that. That's a little too much for what we're trying. You know what I mean? There's other things involved. If you can't look at a music video director's reel and see the type of film director they could be, you should not be picking directors.
Hmm.
That should not be, you know what I'm saying? And you know it. Mm-hmm. You know when you look at certain directors, like you see the direct connecting line between Francis Lawrence music videos and Francis Lawrence movies. David Fincher music videos and David Fincher movies.
Totally.
Spike Jonze music videos. Each one of these guys, and the guys who are inconsistent and the guys who are all over the place were inconsistent when they made their music videos.
Mm-hmm.
You knew the certain guys that their shit, you knew like, oh, this looks great and that guy did it. He had a good DP. He was not the driving force behind that production quality. Because here's his next video, and it looks like complete shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you knew what was going to get. And those guys that have gone on to do movies, yeah, their movies look as flim-flammy as their music videos did.
Mm-hmm.
So a director is a director, period. That's my music video defensive rant.
Have you ever had as good a collaboration over the course of a number of videos as you have with Drake?
Drake and I work really well together. Usher and I, when we were working, did really good stuff together. I like working with Puff.
Mm-hmm.
He's a creative. Iggy, I think, was a great creative collaboration.
The problem with working with Puff now is that you have to figure out different ways to light the Ciroc bottles to fund the video.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's product placement. I mean, but I mean, it's...
Have you had any, like, creative ways to do product placement, or is it just, like, just stick in a shot for 3 seconds and get it over with?
Because, you know what, they I guess to a degree, it makes sense, especially with maybe an alcohol... Well, Ciroc, the difference with Ciroc is, and the difference with Beats is that with the people that are putting them in the videos, their ability to flood multiple projects with it is what gives it its power. And then they're going to rap with it and be seen with it. And they actually use it.
Right.
So that product placement makes sense. But, like, you know, we did some product placement for Wicker. For
the basket?
Exactly. For Iggy Azalea's Black Widow video. We had to put in this thing, and it was like, you know, you get a message, and then it self-destructs, and they dropped in a bunch of money to put it in the Iggy video. You're not going to, your campaign can't be, you need to flood the market. And the only way you're going to flood the market is bring in Jimmy Iovine and give him your damn company. You know what I'm saying?
Pills everywhere.
Yeah. Pills everywhere. Beats everywhere, because he has that ability to make sure they show up in projects. And then they put, and they understood what it was. So the flood of product placement can make you be like, oh shit. But you're not going to get your one bottle into one video and think you're going to have that, your Cristal moment with Jay-Z. And again, there's still a part of the audience that is in tune, one, with what's actually hot. And then as well, what artists actually fuck with.
I mean, here at this table, we fuck with Wicker. We're Wicker boys.
Of course, and glasses of water.
I am glad that we're in a time now where, like, you don't have to animate made up like texting services in videos or whatever. You know?
I always shot the screen.
Yeah?
I was always one of those people. Even my old ones, like you look at Lloyd Banks. Again, my nerd, the nerd in me. So when I did the two-way screen, my two-way screen is the, like, reply from the time. Like, I wanted to show, like, this is what a two-way looked like. But then I called it, like, X-mail instead of T-mail.
Sure,
or whatever
yeah.
stupid little thing you had to do. But I put it in the screen and shoot the screen. I was always shooting the screen as opposed to, I hated that, seeing these videos and they're putting these awful, unrealistic text things. I always thought that was so wack.
I saw, who did that? Kelly Rowland is on, like, an Excel sheet.
Oh, in the video which she did with Nelly.
Yeah, Dilemma.
Yeah.
And she's, it's like texting, being like broken up with or something,
At the very beginning of the video. Yeah. Has the thought of you and Drake doing a movie together come up?
No.
Or is every music video a movie anyway?
Wow.
Pretty much. Drake is making music and albums and, you know what I mean? Whatever movie he wants to make, he's going to make, I don't know, Judd Apatow.
Okay.
And James Cameron and Steven Spielberg all fighting to get a moment with him.
I would love to see Drake's Titanic.
Exactly. Like, yeah, he's on top of the world. Every meeting I take, back in when Usher was blazing hot, every meeting I took was like, so, you think Usher might want to... So now every meeting is, so, think Drake might want to get him... I'm like, all right, listen.
If you shoot Toronto for Toronto, then yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't. He's making music. He's living that music life right now. So, you know what his movie plans are. I really don't know, because he could do. Is that anybody in any part of the game would want to be involved with him right now?
And so, TV now for you is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I love shooting. I can get into any part of the game when it comes to camera and what we're doing. I want to develop my own stuff. That's also a big part. Coming again from music video, where I'm the creative, I have that in me. It's not just being a gun for hire. I want to make these things and bring my ideas to life. So I play all those sides.
Are there any people that you want to work with? Like, do you go to concerts?
Not really. Not unless it's, I mean, everything I do seems to come through work somehow. I went to the Beyonce concert. I'd love to do something with Beyonce. Yeah. I called it
Beyond Bootylicious.
Inspirtainment. It was a pretty inspiring.
She walked on water.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a joke. It is an amazing piece of theater. Even if you didn't know who Beyonce was, if it was just one of those, you know, like a Broadway show, and you just go and see some person, she could put that show on the road without her. There's some other girl her and just send it to Japan or something like that. But yeah, it's
where did you see it in Los Angeles?
No, the one here in New York.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Unreal. Some of the stuff that's going on, the dancing, like, That's I joked that Beyonce was made in a test tube by record executives. They all, you
it's
know,
not
what
a joke.
Yeah, it's not. It's like the Captain America of music artists.
Back to the nerd shit.
Yeah, back to the nerd shit. Exactly.
And what else do you have coming up in the very near future?
I mean, I'm locked into this summer shooting kids and drums.
Mm-hmm. You know
what I'm saying? By the way, not a great way to phrase that.
Oh. Right. Exactly. Filming teenagers and their and the dramatic events of their school of the arts.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because DJ Diamond D is actually Kit, but she hasn't told anybody. So Kit now is going to get rid of Diamond D because she feels like she's in Diamond D's shadow.
What?
Real storyline.
See, you are real a director of shadows. Yo, X, thanks so much for coming through.
Thanks. Bow, 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 blow, 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 blow.
Thanks everyone for listening to this week's episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, if people want to find more episodes just like this one, where can they go?
You can go on soundcloud.com/awasteoftime or on iTunes if you search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Also, we are on Twitter at It's the Real. We are on Instagram at It's the Real. We're on Snapchat at It's the Real Eric and It's the Real. It's the Real was taken. And fuck whoever took It's the Real on Snapchat.
Nah. For real, for real.
I like that. No, but also you can go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal. All of our episodes that we have filmed are up there, including Angie Martinez and Miss Info,
Charlemagne the God,
DJ Drama,
Lenny S,
and now Lil X.
Go check them out. The first month is totally free. There's no reason why you shouldn't watch these episodes. It's a lot of fun. As always, leave comments, rate, subscribe to our podcast, and please help us grow this podcast and go tell a friend. Jeff, I know you got a lot of friends. You got a lot of pokey friends. Do you have a friend that you would like to tell about this here podcast?
Yes, I want to shout out somebody who went to college with their brother Dan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, somebody who said not for real for real on Twitter, just like hundreds of others.
Okay.
Someone who has been a constant supporter of us.
Yeah.
Ben Jonas.
Shout out to Ben Jonas. He's out there in Milwaukee.
Yeah, go Bucks.
Shout out to Ben Jonas, a good dude, and he definitely listens every week. I, Jeff, would also like to shout out somebody who went to school with our brother Dan. His name is Mr. Kevin Anderson. Shout out to Kev. He's a good dude. Used to work for the New England Patriots, now works for the Detroit Lions, and he recently got married out in Rhode Island, right? Yeah. Shout out to Kevin Anderson.
Shout out to anybody that went to college with Dan, honestly.
Kevin, Ben, go tell all of your IU friends about A Waste of Time with It's the Real.
And you want to know what? Even if we don't shout you out, you can still tell people.
Oh,
like, because I see, like, for the past 6 months, everybody's been saying in our comments how we're underrated, how we are.
Man, I'm tired of being the underdog.
Yeah, you know what? It's like,
can't we just let's just win? Let's be in first place.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
I'm really good at Pokemon.
Level up. Go tell your friends about A Waste of Time with It's the Real, and we promise to keep putting out episodes just like this one today. Yeah.
Get excited for more Pokemon talk, because I am fully into it now.
Oh man. I'm Eric.
I'm Jeff.
And this
is A Waste of Time.